Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As always, our conversations include you. If you'd like to join this one, call us at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If you're calling us from the neighbor islands or somewhere other than on Oahu, the phone lines are open. Now, you probably don't need a reminder that the Hawaii Health Connector has been underperforming, to be generous with the descriptions, since its launch last October. Now, a legislative package introduced in the State House could restructure the Hawaii Health Connector and make the state responsible for it. Big question is, can it correct the connector and make it accountable, transparent, and reliable so it can fulfill its purpose? Tonight, we're going to discuss that with the lawmakers who introduced the six measures. Joining me tonight, Health Committee Chair Della Albalotti and the Chair of the Consumer Protection and Commerce Committee, Angus McKelvey. And again, you too. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Let's get started. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
It's been no small task putting this together, trying to look at what we've seen in the last couple of months and look at how it might be made different and, in your case, how you think this might be made better. Let's talk a little bit about these six measures, because there is some overlap in some of them. There is some redundancy built into it, obviously, because you've got six of them and you don't know exactly what's going to happen to any one of them. But they do take on different pieces of it. So, Della, let's start with you a little bit and look at the one that sort of, at least the one I think of that sort of lays out a lot of framework for that, the 25-29.
So that bill will transition the connector from a private to a state entity, and in that bill we place the Hawaii Health Connector within DCCA, which is where the insurance commissioner is housed. A number of the bills also make changes to the composition of the Hawaii Health Connector Board. There have been concerns raised about conflicts of interest.
Because you had people who were representing insurers that were on that as well.
Yes, and the difference between now and when the connector was first started, we now have insurers who are now, in fact, selling plans on the connector. So that is, of course, HMSA, Kaiser, and HDS is also the dental insurance plan that is selling as well as on the board. In many other states, there's a strict rules saying that they cannot be on the board. So, but we don't want to cut out that expertise altogether. And so 2529 does contemplate two different kinds of groups, a consumer, patient, business, and healthcare advisory group. So you could conceivably have a number of health plans there, insurers there. We also are looking in 2529 at an intergovernmental agency advisory group. What we found was that in many other states, there is not the number or sometimes any governmental directors on the board. And in our particular case, I believe we had three or four directors. So, we want to look at how we could make it more efficient. We also want to look at how we can involve the important stakeholders, but maybe get certain levels of expertise. So 2529 also identifies certain areas of expertise that are needed on the board. And at yesterday's hearing, our first hearing on these slate of bills, we did ask Mr. Matsuda, who's the director of the Health Connector now, and he said that, no, those areas that we identified were good. And in fact, it was very good that this shouldn't be a surprise that we have identified health technology, information technology, as one of the kind of expertise areas that we should be looking for. Now, again, in many other states, for their boards, they designate those areas of expertise. And so we want to make sure that the board, as it moves forward, when it moves into state government, as this bill contemplates, that it has the necessary expertise to be able to draw upon.
And as you talk about all that expertise, you're looking at from different pools of people within the community so that you would have consumer groups or patients or people who are involved with business or insurers, but they would be in advisory capacity.
Yes, we did create a separate group for that, but what I'm talking about are the areas of expertise for the board members.
On both sides, true. But, you might have some that would be on the board who would be ex officio and not able to to vote, and they could have the expertise part of it but not necessarily be a voting member. We'll talk about some of that restructuring in a second. But in terms of creating consumer groups and being able to broaden the advisory capacity in all this, looking at the fact that both on the board and just generally, there wasn't a whole lot of help with IT.
Yes, and for the consumer advisory group, that is something new. There has been a lot of complaints, and we did get a strong support, I believe, from AARP in yesterday's testimony for being sure that we engage more consumers and patients.
Angus McKelvey, I want to get you into this conversation, too. Looking at how much expertise to be able to bring into this without making it overly cumbersome seems to also be part of the issue that you're wrestling with.
Mm-hmm.
Where's that balance?
I think the balance is to, like you just hit the nail on the head, is to make sure that as we try to bring in all these different areas of expertise, it doesn't become so large and cumbersome that you basically are unable to reach a consensus, or you know, you aren't able to react and make decisions on a timely manner for the connector. And so that's one of the things that is important to balance. And I think, too, you know, to play, you know, one of the concerns or issue why the insurance companies were put on the connector board is because the two that are on there are the only two entities that are on the connector itself selling the plans. So the question is that one of the things, items of discussion is if they are removed or become ex officio, will they even remain on the connector? And that's something that has to be explored further as the legislative process, you know, continues. But I think to have the expertise, particularly in the IT area, is needed, especially with some of the issues that have come up with systems not being able to talk to each other, and with this type of interplay between our own state connector, our Department of Human Services hub called CALEA, as well as the federal government hub, which all have to talk to each other. So that's why the IT portion is really important. And hopefully, though, I think it's important, even if it does become a state agency, and I'll do the quotes in the air, because we don't know what form that will take or where exactly it will be housed. But we need to look outside of just, you know, the Office of Information Management Technology, outside of government, to the private sector, to people who are actually doing this out there in the real world, because it's the real world collisions that have really reared their heads in the outrolling of the connector.
Which might lend some credence to why, at least as you've positioned it in this bill, it would fall under the connector would fall under DCCA.
Yes, the Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs, correct. That's one. That's the most logical, simply because the insurance commissioner does reside, you know, in within the Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs. So that would be a logical place. But there are other. There are discussions of other, you know, agencies or places in government where the connector could be attached or housed in as well. So it's not just within Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs.
Specifically where?
Well, Department of Budget and Finance has been suggested, and there have been some other suggestions too. But
you know, I think what one of the other things we're doing with the bills that we heard yesterday that might not have been in the package that was earlier released is, we really want to tie the health connector with the governor's work on healthcare transformation. So another place that's being contemplated is somehow in connection with the healthcare transformation efforts of the governor. And he does have an office of healthcare transformation within his own office.
The question, though, that some people may be thinking of, well, if you have part of it residing here and part of it residing there, is it going to be somehow fragmented? Particularly have a situation where you have IT where
it would not be bifurcated in any way, shape, form. It's more, instead of saying this group and this, it's more of, you know, the entire connector would be attached to Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs.
Understood. But if you have the commissioner there too, wouldn't it be a logical thing to have all of the connector attached to DCCA?
Yeah, that's one of the most strongest arguments for DCCA. But the insurance commissioner is involved, even if it wasn't. He's involved now. He has to review. He had to review the rate plans before they were, you know, could be filed and put on the connector. And he still has the oversight of rate review. So he will stay very involved no matter where they strategically house the connector.
Right, but so is the director of human services. I mean, just how many places do things reside without having one central location for it where it seems to be an entity, not parts of it residing in other entities?
So, Beth, you know what's the beauty with one of the proposals is that intergovernmental agency advisory group. You know, what we know from our own experience and from the rollout at other states, there has been sometimes intergovernmental agency conflicts, problems with DHS speaking to their, you know, Department of Labor or to the tax hub. So one of the beauties of that, and I think the beauty of the hearing process is, you know, we posed the question to Commissioner Ito yesterday because in one of our proposals, he is on the board. And to his credit, he said, you know, whether or not I'm on the board, I'm still going to be involved. So maybe with that knowledge in mind, maybe it would be okay for if he was not on the board, but he be placed on an advisory group. And so, you know, those are the kinds of questions that we're wrestling with as we as these bills move through. Again, to the insurance commissioner's credit, he acknowledged that his placement on the board of directors may be problematic because he is, in fact, a regulator of the programs. So maybe he is better in an advisory role and not on the board. And so those are the kinds of questions that we have to explore. Is it a conflict of interest for the director of human services to be on the board? Maybe she should be on the, or that director should be on the advisory group. These are the kinds of questions we're looking at as session progresses.
We've got a caller on the line, and we're going to go now. Laurel from Kailua, welcome to Town Square.
Thank you very much. I have a question and a concern. The Hawaii Health Connector has never been transparent about its operating costs. And my question is, how can the public support making it a state agency and putting taxpayers on the hook for its future? That's my question.
Well, residents can get involved by participating in our hearing process now. You know, the AARP has been very good and has been making the case for more transparency. We at the legislature, and particularly at the in the House, have been asking for budgets, for more information. And again, to the credit of the connector, we are getting more information. But
she raises a very, very good point, which is why this conversation is happening. I mean, a lot of the, you know, angst in the public, you know, has been because it is a private nonprofit, these types of information that is normally available to lawmakers and the public through the budget hearing process is not, you know, being readily made available because of the legal liabilities and other things attached to private nonprofits that are not part of the state. That's why in the one of the bills we introduced, we set up a trust account within the Compliance Resolution Fund, which would allow the insurance commissioner to review the exact money requests from the Hawaii Health Connector. It's kind of a quasi-zero-based budgeting approach, which is we're not just going to hand over $8 million, $16 million because, hey, when you do that, realistically, you're probably going to spend it all. It's more of a you have to come forward to the commissioner and file exactly what every dollar you're seeking is going to go towards.
Well, speaking of AARP, we've got Jerry on the line from that organization calling us now. Welcome to the program. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Yeah, Jerry Silva, the state president for AARP. First of all, let me thank both the representatives there. They have moved mountains. I was at the hearings yesterday, and I thoroughly agree with what they're doing in terms of greater transparency and conflicts of interest. The major concern that we have, basically, is how is this thing going to be financially stable, or I should say sustainable? And that's critical to us, because whether this remains as a nonprofit or becomes a state organization, somebody's going to have to pay the bill. Sustainability for us is a major issue, and I know that the new executive director addressed this, but that's the big concern, and I'm just curious as to how the legislature wants to deal with that.
Jerry, thanks so much for the call. Good to talk to you.
Bye now.
Part of that goes back to another bill in the package, which would be the 2527 that you and I talked about the other day, and looking at the sustainability fee into some of that. I mean, in part, that would be contained within how this would be made sustainable.
Yes, and we are, you know, we have been pressing very, I guess, what's the best
firmly.
Word? Firmly. To get the connector to present us with their sustainability plan. And the thing is the federal government is only going to fund this so far, and then it will completely be on the onus of the state and all states to make their connectors self-sufficient. And so that's why this plan is important, and we need it now so that we can start to see what their plan is and address it through the legislation and bring up these concerns during the legislative process, which, you know, only runs until the beginning of May. And so that's why this is really important that we have this type of conversation. And the biggest issue is with the sustainability fees is how do you create a fee-based system that would allow the connector to be, and of course this goes along with our previous discussion of accountability and review of what the, every dollar requested is for, but how do we create a fee mechanism whereby it the sustainability fee, I say federally mandated sustainability fee, because this is being mandated by the federal government, These fees, right now the proposition is only plans within the connector would be assessed as fees. But if you look at the some of the numbers or percentages that are being discussed, they're quite high, whereas if you were to apply them to all plans being sold in the state, in or outside the connector, then the fee would be quite low compared to what, to be able to sustain the connector. But it really comes back to, and this goes great to Jerry's point, is part of sustainability plan is knowing what exactly you're spending your money on and whether or not the money being spent is actually delivering the product and services to the consumers as intended and represented.
Looking at that fee and how it would be assessed, the basic point that this bill looks at is how not to disadvantage the insurers who offer fees outside, offer their plans outside of the connector where those fees aren't necessarily being levied in that same way, being able to equalize that, which is the responsibility of the commissioner.
Yes.
And more people, obviously more plans, you spread it around a lot, a lot more easily than if you have an onerous amount of money that you have to raise, which would flow out of whatever an annual report would happen for the connector so that they would know exactly what had to be raised to be able to meet that debt service, which again puts the commissioner in somewhat of a conflicting place.
Mm-hmm. It sure does. And then one thing other states are looking at, and I do have to stress that other states are doing this, we are not considering at this time, is they're looking at moving all lines of insurance to be sold through their portal or state exchange, property, casualty, the whole gamut, which would then, the sustainability fee would be very micro. And also, it also reflects the real world of bundling that occurs, when people choose a wide variety of plans, bundled together to give them the best possible rates.
They get a break.
Yeah, they get a break, exactly.
So. And the question is then, what would that break look like with this sort of situation where everything would be on the connector? But the point being that we have to start somewhere with all this. Now, we're talking about lots of different scenarios here. Who knows what it may look like by the time of the end of the session. But as we're going through this process, the one thing that seems to be a good reminder is it may or may not get fixed by the end of session. There may only be some of it. How much of it's going to make you happy to say that something substantive was done this time?
Well, we're facing a very serious deadline. December 31st, 2014 is when federal funds cease to be able to be used for the health connector. We are not in session on December 31st, 2014. So we have to get something done. We have to address the sustainability issue. We have to have a plan in place, or we have to sure as heck have some idea of how the health connector is going to be funded. Because January 1st, if they don't have funds, you're talking about a significant a number of folks who may not where are they buying their insurance? We don't know. I don't think we're going to get to that scenario. I think we are going to have some kind of fix. We're going to have some kind of plan going forward. But there's all sorts of things that are happening that are in flux that are even influencing the very legislation we're moving. So, for example.
Wait, including information that you don't have yet?
We don't have we don't have the sustainability plan from the health connector. From yesterday's hearing, we teased out that maybe they'd be able to get the sustainability plan by March or April. But for the House purposes, for our budgeting purposes, we really need it by the end of February. So by the end of our hearing, of course, we are pressing. Please give us a sustainability plan, a rough sustainability plan by February. Now, we may have to move forward, and that's, again, why we have the legislative process that we do. We will make the best decisions we can with the legislation we have. And as we punt it over to the Senate, we'll gather more information to be able to tease out what we need to do with these bills.
Meanwhile, though, all these bills come up for decision-making tomorrow, and that could be potentially problematic.
All bills this early in session are works in progress. So we will pass it out with a defective date. We will want to continue the conversation. We can move 2-3 vehicles at once. And in the House, we've purposely referred it so that there are 3 referrals. First, the Health Committee, my committee, Angus's committee, CPC next, and then Finance. Mm-hmm. And I think, we shouldn't be afraid to be having tough conversations in public, to be throwing the ideas out there to figure out where may be the best placement, what are some of the potential sources of revenue. How can we drive more enrollment to the health connector so they can begin to meet the numbers that they need to become sustainable. You know, one of the interesting things that came up at yesterday's hearing when we were discussing a bill about navigators was some testimony from brokers.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about that in just a second. I just want to remind you, though, that you're listening to Town Square, and you just heard Representative Della Albalati talking about having tough conversations in public. Well, we kind of think we're doing that tonight,
yes, you
and
are.
You're part of it. If you would like to join us, the phone lines are open. 941-3689 is the number if you call us from Oahu. That's the number to call, 941-3689. Or from the neighbor islands, or if you're someplace else listening to the live stream and want to get in on this conversation too, you can call us at 877-941-3689. There are so many levels of conversation that we can be having about this. The idea is to look at, we need some sort of foundational start, which is what you've proposed in shifting the responsibility for the connector, but also looking at some of the other permutations that you've seen happen in other states. And we're just starting to talk about what would it look like, for example, to have all kinds of other pieces of insurance on the connector, or to have brokers be involved. And what does that mean for, you know, these navigators, and what kind of information they have or they don't have, or how well informed they are or aren't in helping people to make really serious decisions about what they want to have and how they can be covered. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, let me talk about the navigators first. I think that the connector has done a good job at identifying navigators, identifying nonprofit groups that are already out there working with the uninsured or underinsured population. There has been some rocky starts with the navigators, but I think we haven't had the problems of navigators leading folks astray as maybe we've heard some horror stories on the mainland. But the navigators are very special. They are not able to sell insurance. That's not their role. Their role is informational. But other states have looked at brokers, and I'm going to kind of maybe punt this over to my colleague, because he probably knows a little bit more about it and how they will interact. But brokers, they work with a different population. They may be working with the small businesses. So they know their clients, and they may be able to access another part of the community that has not yet really been looking at the health connector as an option.
And the thing is that, you know, I mean, the navigators are there to assist the navigation of the site, but a lot of times people have questions, you know, what plan is right for me? You know, you have three metal plans, you know, that are offered on the connector. Is it the bronze plan, which has the lowest rate but very high deductibles? Is it the platinum plan, which actually I think offers the best of both worlds, you know? And these are the types of things that a lot of times are not being answered and people get frustrated. So I personally want to bring the brokerage question back into the equation, because they work with their clients. They know what may be the right fit, which metal plan will work for you, especially when you have families that have different eligibility requirements, availability of different tax credits that they may be able to take advantage of to offset, you know, rates, particularly those who have gone up because of this phenomenon known as age banding that has been arisen because of the Health Connector and the Affordable Care Act. So, and again, you know, because they can sell insurance, because they can work with their clients, I think this is one of the things of how do you add value to the connector. If they're out there working with their clients who they have a trust relationship, and they can say, hey, this plan will work for you, this plan will work best for you, then all of a sudden people will be able to make really informed choices as to what level of coverage which will work best for them and their family.
All right, we're going to pick this up in just a second. I'm sorry,
I just wanted to add some data to this. So as of January 11th, the Health Connector has had a total of 2,709 individuals enrolled.
You went and you looked after I talked to
you
the other day.
Yes, I did. Got my homework done. But interestingly, 350 businesses have applied for a health plan on the shop side. And it would be interesting to know, are those, you know, small businesses, four people, five people, you know, and so it's that market that maybe we should also be focusing on. Can we get more small businesses enrolled, you know, in the event, you know, if they qualify for tax credits? So that's just another area. We can continue to talk about the shop side of things.
Yes, but it's important to know the shops are the small employer groups exclusively. So those are the small businesses that have signed up. But there are special challenges that are facing our small businesses because of our Hawaii Prepaid Health Care Act and the Affordable Care Act and the what has been known as a collision or intersection between the two.
Which began to come out in some of the conversation that we had the minute we had the connector online, and people were calling up and they're really saying, well, this is what's happening with my premium, and this is what we had covered for our employers before, and now I don't know if I can even keep these employees on in this way. And that's been part of what, as you say, is the collision. We're going to talk more about it. We're going to get some of your phone calls in now. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone lines are available, 941 3689 if you're on Oahu, 941-3689 and 877-941-3689. Going to Bill calling us from Kailua Kona. Aloha, Bill. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you. I tried repeatedly to use the online connector and eventually gave up on it. And it seems to me that Hawaii should just admit that we failed on it and we've wasted enough money on it. Is there any chance we can just kick this back to the federal system?
Well, actually, you know, that's come up, you know, because some states have what has been called federal exchanges that runs by the federal government, but they're actually federally facilitated exchange, meaning that they come in, they set it up, but eventually the states have to take over this federal mandate and run it themselves. And so that is, we are trying to seek certain exemptions, including in the, I believe in 2017, that the states will be able to apply for what they call innovation waivers, which could possibly allow us to be able to pursue our, you know, universal health in Hawaii through our prepaid health care act and to not have to be under the full mandate of the health connector, you know, that has been given to us. But it's important to know that the federal government, you know, even though in those states where they're facilitating these exchanges, eventually all exchanges will have to be run by the states themselves and be sustainable, which goes back into the first discussion we were having.
Bill, when you said kick it back to the federal government, is that what you had in mind?
Yes.
The other special challenge with kicking it back to the federal government is our prepaid health care. So folks who purchase plans in the connector who qualify for prepaid, those plans have to be compliant with prepaid. And that is the really different and unique thing about Hawaii. And you know, if we thought we had a rocky rollout and look at what the federal government and if they had to deal with making sure that the plans for Hawaii were prepaid compliant, that would be a huge challenge for them.
But those plans which are platinum and gold are the ones which are prepaid compliant.
Yes.
7A and 7B, yes, exactly. And they offer the best, you know, thing for consumers. But I think that, you know, Bill's point in particular is I personally believe that we were doing a better job of achieving the goals of the ACA, which is, you know, universal coverage because of our Prepaid Health Care Act in Hawaii. And, you know, while you can't Monday morning quarterback, I think decisions that were made should have probably been made the other way. But so now the question is, how can we take advantage of this innovation waiver and request for other exemptions, like having the small employer groups considered as large employer groups in the state of Hawaii, which would kind of reduce the age banding effect that we're seeing on our small businesses?
That was always the big fear, that somehow that having gone as far as we did with prepaid health care, that we would be disadvantaged by the ACA and that somehow we would lose something in the translation. Now, with the innovation waiver, how likely is it that we might be able to apply for that?
We are going to be applying for it. We've been stressing very hard. We should apply for it. And our gap group in Hawaii is very small compared to other states. I mean, the uninsured group is, you know, I believe 10 to 30,000 maximum of a state of 1.3 million. You know, look at New York. New York, 50% of the state is uninsured. And out of that 50%, nearly 80% are what they call the immortals or young people. So in New York, you know, the exchange and, you know, age banding and everything was meant to get all of these young uninsured people into the connector. And when you have young people in the pool, then the risk is basically the risk pool becomes such the insurance company will lower the rates. But in Hawaii, when you have employers telling their older employees, we're going to make you 19 hours or less, which means you don't have prepaid health, they go to the connector, and now you have a connector pool that is filling up with older people, and that's going to put pressure on rates as well. So these are the types of intersections and collisions between prepaid and the ACA that are presenting unique challenges for us in Hawaii.
Should we get the waiver, then you would also have some time to be able to look at the issue of brokers. Mm-hmm. Put in a lot of these other parts of it that we haven't even started to really consider yet. They're conversation now, but not really looking at how they would be streamlined into something that would be a comprehensive whole. Is this the biggest reason for you to want to do this? Is somehow that we, in rebuilding this entirely, that we need to do something to give ourselves some breathing room because of the artificiality of some of these other dates that we've had to deal with, which meant in some cases we couldn't do it in the best way possible?
You know, I don't as you talk about rebuilding things altogether, we're not going to necessarily rebuild everything, a lot of the technical build that's been done by COLEA and DHS and with the Health Connector on the Health Connector side, we now have to look at how to marry those technologies together, and that might be a way to reduce costs, operational costs, maintenance costs as we move forward. I want to stress that we're not going to necessarily do away with the connector and just destroy everything that's there. We can't. We have to work with the infrastructure that
we have.
So
it's not a rebuild, a remodel.
Remodel, restructuring, reforming.
Okay. If you would like to join the conversation, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. You know the rollout was rocky. A lot of people have called up to talk about that in all the months that we've been talking about it. But the question is, where do we go from here? The package of bills introduced into the House this week has some ideas in it, and we're talking about some of those tonight. You're invited to join us, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689, if you call from the Neighbor Islands or if you're listening someplace else to the live stream. It's been a hard situation for a lot of people to get their minds around how the connector first could be launched and then not really launched. And then, as you heard Bill call up and say, couldn't get on it. Couldn't. I mean, people are still saying that. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line of it is that if we don't have enough people participate in it, there are going to be higher costs. Yeah. There's just no way around that very bottom line fact. What other real bottom line facts do you think that most people don't know that they need to know so that we can look at this stuff right in the eye and not dance around it anymore?
As so far as, well, I mean, one of the things, too, is the fact is that under the Affordable Care Act, everybody has to have health insurance. And if they don't purchase health insurance and can show such on their IRS forms, that there's a penalty phase that will kick in. And I think that's what created part of the pressure on the rollout, was the fact that we had the rollout was in October, and then people had a January 1st deadline to start selecting the plans to be in. So, you know, that's – and, that, you know, everybody – we as human beings, we got all the situations in life are going on, and all of a sudden, when it became upon us, then people were like, oh my gosh, I got to get up, I got to go on this connector, I got to make sure I have insurance, I don't want to pay this penalty. Then the pressure was really put on the connector to be fully functional, up and running in time, so people would have that time period before January 1st to start to look at the plans, shop, and get the coverage they need if they didn't have coverage already. So that put a lot of pressure on, as one person told me, if we didn't have this deadline, we could have addressed a lot of the issues that were in the rollout through what they call a soft rollout or behind the scenes rollout, so that when it did go live, that a lot of these issues that happened would not have occurred. And, you know, a lot of the – when things kind of froze in the very beginning, a lot of the plans themselves, people were calling them up directly. You know, HMSA subscribers would, you know, I can't get to the website, I call up HMSA, and they would turn around and say, okay, well, here are the plans that we are offering, and here's the benefits, and here's the costs, and things for you. So that did give people some options. But again, the pressure of the deadlines, I think, with the rollout together did create quite a squeeze, for lack of a better word.
Which had people saying, then why don't we take care of the deadline issue? What mm-hmm. can we do to take care of that instead of going through what we've had to see happen with the lack of connectivity, with the lack of ability to be able to access the stuff? It almost put people in a catch-22 situation.
I think that's where the grandmothering of plans came in, which is that the extension that old plans that were supposed to sunset or close down were given first 1 year and now 2 years. But I, you know, people are like, okay, well, I can grant my old plans grandmothered in, but you know, the companies that offer these old plans, especially those within the connector, have migrated all of their users over to the metal plans. So what is going to probably happen is these older plans, the rates are going to go up to cover the cost of migrating people backwards. And I often advise people, you know, just as a purely, or myself, I'm like, look at the benefits and the yes. cost together.
But the lesson, I guess what I'm trying to get to about mm-hmm. is that the lesson of knowing of what pressure causes and to be able to do something with an appropriate rollout, to be able to do it right so you're not having to backpedal mm-hmm. and not having to go back and forth, raise costs somehow. You know, that old expression about what you lose on the turns, you gain on the roundabouts. Why even go through all of that exercise if there can be substantial time to be able to plan it and plan it right, especially for Hawaii, especially with the fact that we have prepaid health care.
Exactly. And that's why we're seeking some of these modifications right now, you know, from the federal government. And, you know, if we could Monday morning quarterback, if we were the feds and we're not, and I can't stress that enough, you know, there would have been soft deadlines, not these hard deadlines, so that you could do these soft rollouts behind the scenes, what they call banging the system, trying to break it, so that giving the real world feedback from focus groups and others who use this thing. So
would have been nice.
Would have been great. But
all right, we've got Diane on the line from Kailua-Kona. If you'd like to be next, 941-3689, 941-3689, or 877-941-3689, which is a number that Diana called. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you. Hi, how are you? I my question is just that, you know, I've been working in Hawaii here for 23 years, full-time employee. My employer gives me my health care from HMSA. Does somebody like me who has insurance already need to be concerned about all of this that's going on, or do I just stay status quo?
So wait, let me understand, Diana, because we're not hearing you very well. Let me just get this clarified. Okay. You have insurance through your employer?
Yes. I'm a full-time employee. I'm a dental hygienist, and I've had my insurance for 20-something years.
Well, then lucky you. You don't really have to pay attention to any of this.
Okay. That's kind of what I wanted to know. I mean, I have my insurance, and it's been the same, and I'm just... It's really the people that don't have any insurance.
I will make a plug, though. You know, part of the whole ACA is also focused on preventative care. So we as a society have to focus on just being healthier. And we're very lucky. We live in the healthiest state in the nation. But again, I cannot stress enough. Yeah, you might not have to worry because you're one of those lucky folks who are full-time employed. But driving down healthcare costs means if we're all healthier, hopefully, those kinds of huge hospital costs will also go down, you know.
Right.
But in terms of having her really worried that somehow she's got to run out and go and do something, that's not what she has to go do now. But it's kind of interesting that we're still hearing that question because there is so much confusion still out there, even mm-hmm. after all of the conversation. It's almost as if there's sort of, you know, health connector fatigue that's set in.
And also it would depend on the size of the business she works for. And, you know, notification would have been given to her employer that they are migrating them to a metal plan and to select the metal plan. And again, platinum is the prepaid healthcare compliant plan. However, based upon her age, there could be a rate increase. And then, you know, this is one of, I guess, my rubs with, you know, age banding and why, you know, it may work great for New York where you have this huge young people. But here, the thing is, there's no reflection in rates of your health lifestyle. The analogy I use is, when you're under age banding, when you're 52, you're treated the same. You could be somebody who takes care of themselves, works out three times a day, does positive feedback under the loss experience system. That would be credited through your rates. And at the same time, if you're on the beach drinking a 12-pack and eating Lau Laus all day long, well, then, you know,
you're going to get in trouble.
You're making frequent hospital visits, then, yeah, your rates will go up. But right now, under this new system, there's no reflection of that anymore. And, you know, you'll hear them say, oh, well, wellness programs are good for your company, good for your employee. But the bottom line is that rate reflection is called loss experience has been, you know, it's unfortunately not on the table anymore. And that, to me, kind of was something that has always been concerning because, you know, we in the state of Hawaii, we're the health state, we have a lot of our older people are working, they're healthy, and they should be able to have that reflected in their rates.
Well, the fact that we have such a long-lived population and that people do live longer here than any other place, perhaps that there should be some special consideration for that fact.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And that we do have a slightly older age curve because of that, yes, as well. So, I mean... But, you know, these are the issues that we're trying to bring to the table. You know, one of the things we wanted to do when working with Chair Malotti and with Chair Luke is we all came together, we all co-introduced the bills, and we're trying to work as a team to build upon the conversations at each committee level so that we have a flow of continuity and not just what you often see where one committee will completely change course from another, and not, a lot of times these conversations will almost happen in vacuums. And so we felt we have to work together as a team, we have to communicate and build upon the discussion and the options through all the committees so we have the whole legislative session to be able to come together with solutions that are well thought out. And like I say, you know, I talked about banging the system, all of these ideas and testing them metal on metal to make sure that what we're going to implement will give us the what we nickname tasks, transparency, accountability, sustainability for the connector.
When you talk about banging the system, once you actually have a system to bang, getting it through this session, though, for whatever parts of this may actually get through the session, is still going to be quite a feat because it's got to move from you over, you know, make see whatever makes crossover. What's sort of the eyeballs looking over the wall over at the Senate having to say to you? Are you having any real discussion?
I would say that you know, both houses are probably moving in their own directions, and we will hammer things out at conference. I will say that I think we have the first shot at it. We've taken, again, a unified approach here in the House. I have to say that, you know, at yesterday's hearing, the testimony from some of the departments was not quite what I was hoping for. From the governor was not what I was hoping for. But I think from after yesterday's experience and moving forward, I think we're going to have a governor who's more engaged in the conversation. And I think we're going to have better work product. And it'll be something that I think, you know, we are hoping that the whole House will get behind, and then we can toss the ball over and see what the Senate does with all of our bills. And let me say, maybe the Senate already has scheduled some of their bills. So, you know, we also have to be mindful that they may be developing their own kind of approaches to this that we're going to have to be open to.
But unlike some other things, that there's no real coordinative with this one.
You know, there are just so many moving pieces that it's hard to coordinate on this one.
Which means, though, that as those pieces keep moving, even after crossover, it's going to be, as it usually is, a long, hard run. But especially for this, up to the end of session, when we have so many deadlines still looming out there, particularly the end of the year, and we'll have to wait and see. By when will you know about the waiver?
Well, hopefully we will be able to know soon. We've just got the letter drafted. We're sending it out. And, you know, that's why we also are looking at some other possible plan Bs, including the governor had one idea of, okay, if we're going to have age banding and older workers are going to be disproportionately have their rates increased, maybe there's some type of opportunity to have a state tax credit, you know, for this group to offset, you know, the rate increase for them, particularly in a small business group. That's an idea that we're working on and developing language for in case that we don't get this waiver exemption that we're seeking, or this modification, I should say it's a more accurate term right there. And, you know, the idea being if with the credit idea is we want to make sure it's means tested like the credits, federal credits are, so the people that, you know, who have the levels of income get the credit. And it basically flows through the employers, through the plans themselves, so they actually are used to bring down the rates and not – you know, while it's great to have money in your pocket, we want to make sure it's actually going to bring down the rates of the insurance you're paying and not ending up someplace else. So that's an ongoing discussion, too. You know, that's happening between us and the governor's office and the connector and everybody else is, you know, how do we offset this collision effects if we're not able to get the modifications or, you know, flexibility that we're seeking from the federal government?
As you mentioned, a lot of moving pieces. And tonight, if you're just joining us, we're talking about some of the legislative package, actually the entire legislative package, to change how the connector operates and who's responsible for it, how the state might just take it over. We want to hear what you have to say. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. It's going to affect every single one of us if you have to go out and get your own insurance. We want to hear how you're processing some of this. It's been a lot of information in a fairly short period of time. It's tough to absorb. Honestly, we know we only have an hour to be able to talk about some of these things as we're doing. We'll have other conversations in future, I promise. But for the moment, have you had a chance to look at any of these six bills or to even consider the idea of what it would mean to have the connector restructured so that the state is responsible for it? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Representative Angus McKelvey, I told you were going to get in trouble for that comment about the Lalos sitting on the beach and the beer. Somebody just called up, so maybe that one should come out of the rhetoric, but all in fun. But the bottom line with all of this, though, for a lot of people is that they're concerned that somehow with, at least you know what we hear, that the price structure of all of this in trying to keep everybody healthy will mean that somehow they're going to be paying more. Is that simply a fact that we are going to have to deal with, or is there a way for us not to necessarily be paying more? Because we've watched insurance costs escalate for years and years and years, but you know, for some people who saw a jump of 20-30%, that was a very scary proposition, particularly for any sort of businesses trying to do any sort of planning.
Definitely.
I think we are living in a world of just increasing healthcare costs. And again, you know, an uninsured person walks into a hospital ER, the public pays because the hospital eats that cost, and then the hospital has to raise its cost to its other private paid insurance paid consumers. So I think this first effort of trying to make sure that everyone's insured is the first piece of the ACA reform that we're going through right now. We cannot forget the health transformation piece of it. How can we do better care coordination? Can we do patient-centered medical homes? Can we do Medicaid medical homes? Can we figure out how do we get better care for the high utilizers in the system that we know are, causing skyrocketing rates in the ER? And that's the second part. That's the second wave of the reform that we have to struggle with. And that's probably a topic for a whole nother hour.
Well, that's the big 800-pound gorilla in the room. All these conversations about how do you portion across these different age spectrums and groups the high cost of health care, of medical care, and this is some of the things where other states are looking at things like transparency and pricing between different hospitals for procedures, as well as tiered pricing and other things. What do you do about high users? How do we get people, to transition from the critical care beds to assisted, care and, long-term care outside of the hospital system to free up those beds? These are all conversations that have to go on in conjunction, as almost a circular layer around the connector conversation itself. Because if healthcare costs keep skyrocketing, then we can move it around. But, we're still not getting around the big thing, that how do we contain the skyrocketing costs of healthcare?
To that point, Beth, one of the bills in our package, House Bill 2269, is actually a governor's proposal. And this would allow the publication of premium information by the insurance commissioner. How great would that be to be able to have all managed care plans and being able to see what their premiums are for health insurance? That's a piece of the transparency. Another piece being pushed by the Health Care Transformation Initiative is the all claims database. Mm-hmm. So again, we're trying to get, I think, in various parts of the system, and this is where we're trying to kind of coalesce it together as we hear these bills together, is what are we doing about transparency in all of healthcare pricing? I like that. I like the way Angus said that, transparency of healthcare pricing. That's another part of this reform environment.
All right, we're going to pick this up with some of our callers who've been waiting patiently. Going to go now to Diana calling us from Maui. Aloha, Diana, and thank you for your patience.
Aloha, and thank you so much for bringing this up before the public. And thank you so much to all of you who are willing to wrestle with this incredibly complex problem for us. Thank you. My questions are, it was my understanding that in the news, when this first came up, that it was already decided that older people would pay more. And it was decided by a group on Maui that was how it would be handled here. So that's question one, but it sounds like that's not true.
No.
Question two is, I'm semi-retired. I work a little bit independently on my own, and I'm on Social Security and Medicare. Will this affect me in any way?
No, it will not.
Not with Medicare.
Mm-mm, no, not if you. The Medicare group is basically, yes, this will not affect you at all. But that is one of the eligibility portals of the healthcare connectors for those who could be Medicaid eligible and to get, benefits through there. But you should be okay.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. But the Maui group there was no Maui group that made a decision either. So
no, we want to blame Maui for everything.
No. From Lahaina, don't go start up now, sister.
All right, well, I'm glad you said that because we've got Lloyd calling us from Maui. He's coming up next. Aloha, Lloyd. Thanks for your patience.
Thank you. Can you hear me all right?
We can, yes.
Okay. I just wanted to give a short experience that I had with the connector, that it might be helpful in terms of your website. Everybody recognizes that we didn't have a rollout that was a soft rollout like you expected or hoped for. So you went forward and with a software that's got bugs in it. I just wanted to suggest that right at the beginning of the web page, you have some facts about some phone numbers to call. We had a trouble. We applied. And we couldn't get a denial letter, or we couldn't get an approval letter. So we had to bury down in your website to find an office. And then once we found the office, they weren't answering the phones. So we went down to the office. And when we went to the office, they sent us then to another building, another place, another company called MedQuest to get the answer from them of whether or not we were denied or approved. And then they didn't respond even going down to the second office, so we had to go down again to the second office. These are not problems in the system. This is problems with management. It's problems with planning, you know, for people's needs relative to entering the system.
And Lloyd, you're getting a lot of heads.
I just want to point out that you gotta think it through.
Yeah, we've got some heads nodding around this table, and forgive us, but we're having a little problem with your line. So, but as he was talking, and I was watching you nod, Angus McKelvey, mm-hmm. like this is not a new story for you.
This is why the Connectors website, because it's not ours, but the Connectors website, you're right. This comes down to the eligibility determination issues that we're, you know, dealing with. You know, one of the more pointed conversations has been that the federal government allows 45 days for these eligibility determinations. And so people are not getting their denial or approval letter in time. And then, of course, you have to have sign up for insurance. So
they're left in limbo.
Limbo. So one of the things the connector is finally advising is to just go sign up and not claim the eligibility. Just sign up so you're enrolled and then put your eligibility request in so they're at least covered while this eligibility determination is happening. But this is one of the big issues that we've been dealing with is how do we do what Colorado did and get from the federal government an ability to ping the federal hub separately through the connector and not have to go through the Department of Human Services COLEA site? Or how do we get this COLEA determination to be seamless and quick, you know, and not take this long and have this poor experience that Lloyd has where they're sending him down to the office to try to get an answer?
And he still can't get the answer because they send him to the wrong office. But he's right. I mean, because on one part of this, you're talking about an IT issue of how do you set this up properly so that people can easily flow and get the information they need mm-hmm. and be able to have a response in a timely way. The other part of it is just the people part of it. Going down to an office and having people actually know what's going on so they put him where he should be and be able to get him an answer as quickly as possible.
I think that's what well-intentioned was to, okay, the quickest way is to have you physically go down and get the determination. It's too bad that they sent him to the wrong office. And this goes back to the navigator issues again. You know, we want our navigators and sisters to be able to send people to the right place, you know. But, I mean, this is one of the things that the Health Committee has been discussing with the Human Services Committee has been the issue of eligibility determination and COLEA, and how does it become not a barrier to people getting the coverage that they need, you know, so they don't get penalized. I mean,
you know, I think we are well aware. We've had a lot of complaints about the fact that it's not real-time eligibility. We've had complaints from folks, from navigators as well. So, you know, I think Lloyd has hit it on the head. It's also about people and management of that. And
people management, training, all of that, and having the right and good information, which a lot of people say that, you know, they get frustrated just generally in Hawaii that we don't seem to have that kind of service component down pat.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And, you know, this also, you know, part of the issue in looking all of this is to have the service component down pat, but also to, I think this is where one of the arguments for state oversight or within the connectors, you would have to go through the procurement code. And many of these contracts, IT contracts and such, which are starting to come to the surface as being perhaps some of the reasons behind this could have been avoided. There had been a public process of procuring these types of services from the vendor.
Do you see vendors who will no longer be part of the process?
At this point, I can't say because that Tom Matsuda is working with them to proactively correct the issues that have arisen, and some of it has been in a relation between different, you know, vendors and their IT products. But, you know, again, the procurement code could have offered a way to publicly go out and, you know, have standards and determinations of what exactly was being procured, was it delivered, and is it working, and what can be done to fix it and give the value to the state taxpayers. And that's the thing I try to say to my colleagues, you know, this is the taxpayers' money. When they say federal, we all pay federal taxes. And so we need to make sure that this thing works so that people's money isn't just being away.
And that's part of a change of mindset, too, of understanding what that responsibility means and who's actually footing the bill. Mm-hmm. And kind of giving argument to or giving a lot of fire to the argument that we should be looking at this in a more consumerist way.
Mm-hmm. I think we should. It's about, I mean, to me, we need to create something that will give the consumers true value. And one of the things it could do is it could be part of a health management tools for the consumers, not just an insurance portal, you know. And if the consumers have the level of service, they can have a way to get frequently asked questions and other information quickly, they can start making the healthcare decisions for themselves beyond just what kind of insurance plan may work for my family or for myself and my business.
At this point, we've got just a few minutes left before we're going to have to say goodbye. We know that these are all coming up for decision-making tomorrow. We talked about that a little earlier in the show. Whatever may happen after that, this is far from the end of this conversation, which may certainly not go even through or finish up by the end of the session. At what point, what will have to happen just for you to feel that this session was truly productive? If we come to May, middle of May, and we sit down and just sort of do a small debrief and say, all right, looking just at this, this is where we are and this is where we have yet to go. What's that point where you think where we are at, in, let's say, by middle of May, would make you feel that we had a productive session this time? What's your non-negotiables, I guess?
Well, we need a sustainability plan for the Health Connector, and whether that's going to mean a subsidy from the state at some point, you know, I don't know what that's going to look like, because say we don't get the waiver from the federal government to use federal funds past December 31st, 2014, we need to know how the connector is going to be paid for on January 1st, 2015.
To me, it's about transparency and sustainability, that the monies being requested are being, you know, what are they being asked for? Is it performing? I mean, what exactly is being deployed? And could there be other ways for cost savings or better efficiency? To have sustainability without transparency, I think, will be only half a loaf of bread. And that, you know, speaking, I mean, we need to know, and that's why I was put this bill idea in. We need to have overview, and we need to have transparency. We need to know what exactly every dollar is being requested for and how it's spent. And that is where, that is what I'm trying to seek through these bills and other things. And of course, to have a more consumer-friendly website, one that caters to help people and be assistance and a valuable tool and not something that is a federally mandated challenge for them and their families.
So of the bills, at least, that we're looking at right now, if you had to say, I will be happy with the following three things by the end of session, name me three things that you have to have.
Transparency, accountability, and sustainability.
Okay, we've heard those words, but in terms of how that plays out with what you have in the bills, if you said, okay, we have to have a board that looks like this, or we have to have the insurance commissioner be able to do that. Have you gotten it down to that level yet?
I think we're so early in the process right now that we don't have that degree of detail.
Well, that just means we'll have time for another conversation all about it.
And definitely. And we really, and again, the public we want the public involved in this process. The legislative process is a public process. When people like Lloyd and others come with their stories, then we as decision makers can bring them to the connector and other individuals, agencies, so we can get resolution. And that's how we develop a truly consumer-friendly site. So, you know, Lloyd, Bill, and all the others with their stories, we need them. We need their testimony. We need the public input. I mean, the town square, at the legislature, the conversation has to have the public. So everybody who is involved, get involved, because, yes, together we can be able to address these things by knowing the challenges that are out there.
And just to say, you know, one more thing about that, that because so many people have called up feeling that they have been somehow disempowered, or they've been able not to be as fully richly engaged as they would like to because they have some of these experience. Part of this is saying, well, that may be that experience, but if everybody just goes home because they don't like their experiences, nothing's going to happen. So I hear both of you saying that we all have to sort of get over that and know that it's going to be difficult. And do it anyway.
And I think I just want to give a shout out to, you know, Interim Director Matsuda, because he's been doing yeoman's work in trying to address these issues and trying to reach out and take these situations and challenges in others and actually follow through on them on every level of the connector.
Representative Angus McKelvey and Representative Della Albalati, thank you so much for being here. We'll do it again.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you and aloha.
And thanks very much for joining us for tonight for Town Square. I'll see you tomorrow morning on The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.